A good Thursday morning to you. Welcome into the Nick Craig Show, streaming live this morning on YouTube, Rumble, and X. You can take the show with you on demand 24/7 in your favorite podcast app. Just search for the Nick Craig Show and hit the subscribe or follow button, and you'll get a new show delivered each and every weekday morning. It's the Nick Craig Show podcast. Download and subscribe now. Well, we are getting some details in this morning in regards to the status of the economy. Obviously, for anybody that spent any time paying close attention or even half close attention to the presidential election, one of the major issues that allowed Trump to be as successful as he was, yes, of course, his message, his personality, the things that he talked about. But more than anything else, I personally believe it was frustration with the status of the U.S. economy. You had a previous administration that had the idea that they could, and it wasn't just the administration, it was also members of Congress, both Democrats and Republicans, I will note. I want to make sure here I'm an equal opportunity offender. If we're going to call out Democrats for their terrible policies, I think it's also fair that we call out the Republicans that in many cases are right alongside them when these things are coming forward. Democrats and Republicans, the previous administration, really for decades now, elected officials, elected governments have had this idea that you can just spend more money than you take in, that you can frivolously waste taxpayer dollars, and seemingly it will have no effect. And I say seemingly because if they understood even the basics of economics, they would have handled the way in which they went about doing business in a very different way, but they did. So tax and spend, constantly living outside of our means, constantly spending more than we're making. I throw that in air quotes. You pay your taxes. It's not the government doesn't produce a good product or service in which you are paying for. They are involuntarily taking your money. And with that, we saw out-of-control inflation. And on his way out the door, well, Joe Biden leaving us with this beauty of a headline over at Breitbart this morning. Inflation surges. Consumer prices up 3% in January, crushing chances of rate cuts. This is pretty bad news here. The Department of Labor said yesterday that the Consumer Price Index, or CPI, rose 0.5% in January from the month prior. Much more than expected compared with a year ago. Consumer prices are up 3%. So calculating it January of 24 to January of 25, up 3%. Economists had expected the monthly pace of inflation to decline to 0.3% after prices rose 0.4% in December. The median forecast called for a 2.9% gain over the past 12 months, matching the prior month's year-over-year gain. None of the economists surveyed by Econo Day forecast prices rising as fast as 0.5% for the month or 3% for the year. Core inflation, which is a metric that excludes volatile things like food and energy prices, also rose by 4% for the month, twice the rate that it was in December, as economists had forecast a smaller increase to 0.3%. Compared with a year ago, core prices are up 3.3%, more than the 3.2% record in December. Economists had forecasted a decline in the year-over-year rate to just 3.2%. The unexpected strength of inflation forces call into question, and this is really what's going on here, call into question the Fed's decision to cut rates at each of the final three meetings of the Federal Open Markets Committee last year, including the stunning 0.75-point cut on the eve of the election in September. Chairman Jerome Powell told a Senate panel earlier this week on Tuesday that the Fed was no longer in a hurry to cut rates. The labor market has proved more resilient than the Fed expected and inflation more persistent. So that's what we're learning from Jerome Powell. The market has been pricing in two cuts this year, although these were not expected until the summer following this inflation report. The federal funds future market was indicating that the Fed was more likely to cut once or not at all. That, of course, is going to put the Federal Reserve at odds with President Trump, who has been advocating for these rate cuts. Some investors now expect that the Fed's next interest rate move could be an increase rather than a reduction. And boy, would that be interesting to watch. Stocks and bonds sank after the release of the data yesterday. The dollar strengthened against more foreign currencies as higher interest rates made holding the dollar more attractive. That is one thing I haven't looked at this morning, is what do the markets look like? And going over to Fox Business, Dow futures are essentially zero, minus six. NASDAQ futures are up plus 12, so pretty much zero. That's where the markets are going to open. So not a huge impact, at least in the market open today. However, you know, long term, Trump, of course, as I mentioned, you know, why was he so successful in his election? Why did so many people flock towards him? I think a large part of it was that people were and continue to seek major forms of economic relief. They continue to search for a change from what they had seen in the past. And what they had seen and what they, you know, unfortunately had to live through for the last 4 years was a U.S. government and a U.S. economy that was frankly not working for the American people. An economy and a government that was not looking over their shoulder and having their best interest in mind. It was an economy that worked for itself. It was an economy that put nonsensical government programs and wasteful DEI initiatives in front of you and I. And this is really the hard fact, I think, for the left to wrap their head around. And maybe it's because I strongly believe that they continue to be disconnected rapidly from the American people. It had been, and in some aspects, continues to be pretty rough out there economically. I mean, yes, inflation is not the 9% that it was back a summer 2 years ago. I understand that. But it's rough out there. There are a lot of people making a lot of sacrifices to try and keep up with the economic situation that we're living in, which is high inflation, which is high costs of goods and services. I mean, yes, prices have moderated and mediated, absolutely, but they're still much higher than they were before. Meanwhile, you don't see wages rising to that same level, so people are having to make sacrifices. And so imagine and some of you are probably in this case, you're a middle-class family, you're making sacrifices to try and keep up with rising costs, to try and keep up with inflation. So you have to make these sacrifices, and then every time you turn on CNBC or every time you turn on Fox Business, you're just watching the federal government literally pissing money away. You're watching the federal government and hearing stories about all of these wasteful programs that the federal government is involved in. You have to make the sacrifice, yet nobody in Washington, D.C. does. That's the real disconnect, I think, that we're seeing right now. And it's one of the reasons that I think Democrats are continuing to fall out of favor. They don't understand the disconnection. They are not connected with the everyday middle-class American person. It's obvious. Because if they were, Chuck Schumer would not be standing at a press conference, what was that, last week? With a, here's a corona, and here's an avocado. These are going to go up because of Trump's tariffs. I mean, just can you prove any more succinctly that you're completely out of touch with the American public? Corona beer and avocado? Oh, yeah, because yeah, that's what's absolutely driving inflation. It's beer and avocados. I don't buy anything else. You should see my shopping cart when I go to the store. It's full of hundreds of avocados and multiple 24 packs of Corona. That's all I eat and drink 24/7. So when Chuck Schumer stands up and talks about beer and avocados, like, that's what the vast majority of the American public is buying. That's how they're feeding their family of four or six, right? You're just giving them avocados and beer. It just proves the disconnection. And I think it's, again, why they continue to fall out of favor with the American voter. I suspect we will hear something from the president today on this. I did see his schedule a little bit earlier this morning. Let me pull it up again just to verify what the plan is here today. So it looks like the president is set to sign some executive orders at 1 o'clock this afternoon. So I would suspect after the executive orders are signed, like we've seen over the last couple of days, Trump will probably take some questions from the press. Probably going to be asked a question about inflation. Now, of course, the media will try and spin it and say, well, you were inaugurated in January 20th, and prices rose. This is your fault. And, you know, he'll find some way to respond to that. So he's taking questions at 1 o'clock today. It'll be interesting to see what comes of that. And if there are any questions that come up in regards to inflation, we'll keep an eye on it. And if it's newsworthy, we'll bring it to you on the show. If it's a huge story, don't forget to follow me over on X at Nicholas M. Craig. If you're a user of that platform, great way to keep up to date with news throughout the day. So, DOGE, you're familiar with the Department of Government Efficiency. And this kind of wraps into our first story here. More inflation, much larger than expected inflation in the month of January. What is driving a lot of this? It's government spending. It's the Federal Reserve printing money to keep up with the pace in which the federal government spends it. I mean, that's what's happening, flooding the market with essentially fiat cash. Now, over the last 3 weeks, we have seen some major things come out of the federal government because of DOGE and because of some other agencies. I've got a Lee Zeldin video coming up for you in a little bit as well that I think is very interesting. So what I wanted to do this morning was to just play a few minutes of the DOGE, the House Subcommittee on Delivering on Government Efficiency, which is chaired by Marjorie Taylor Greene out of Georgia, I think. So the first meeting was yesterday. It was a lengthy meeting. We don't have a chance to play all of it. But I thought her opening statements were pretty well said. So I want to just play a few minutes of MTG yesterday during this hearing. And just take a listen, and we'll talk about it after.
Good morning. Today we begin the first hearing on the Oversight Subcommittee on DOGE. This committee will be laser focused on bringing full transparency to waste, fraud, and abuse within the federal government and presenting the plans to fix the tremendous problems we expose. We as a country are $36 trillion in debt. That is such a stunning amount of money. It's absolutely staggering to even comprehend how we as a people, we as a country, found ourselves here. This is not a Democrat problem. This is not a Republican problem. This is an American problem. To make it clear for everyone, not only are we $36 trillion in debt, but the compounding interest on our debt is also growing out of control. Even if we decided to defund the entire federal government, we cannot escape our debt and the compounding interest owed on our debt, which grows bigger and bigger every year.
I want to stop her right there, because this is the point that is pretty hard to wrap your head around, because the money we're talking about is so large. She just said, if you completely defunded the federal government, even that would not be enough to make up the nearly almost $37 trillion in debt that we're in right now. So let's not pretend and gaslight ourselves into believing that this is a problem that is just magically going to be solved overnight. Yes, Elon Musk. Yes, DOGE and Trump and MTG and members of Congress, whatever. They're going to cut spending. They're going to find government fraud and waste. Absolutely. And what will it add up to? Hopefully when it's all said and done, it'll be billions of dollars. But that doesn't solve the problem. as you just heard from MTG. This is a systemic issue with spending in this country. So you can cut the fraud, the waste, and the abuse. And I think you need to, of course. I'm not advocating to ignore that. But we've got to change, as a government, how we operate. Right? When you're dealing with your personal finances, you can essentially live one of two ways. You can rack up debt on credit cards, or you can live out of your checking account, meaning what you're receiving in needs to be more than what is going out. You keep a balance in your checking account. Or you can take a, go to a, you know, you probably get the letters in the mail all the time. Free offer from Chase. Great. Sign up for a credit card with a $25,000 limit and just live off that. That's what the federal government does. They live off of the credit card. Multiple credit cards till they're so far in the hole that it seems impossible to get out. Right? It's a systemic issue. It's a way of spending. It's a way of operating that's the problem. Yes, there is fraud. Yes, there is waste. Yes, there is abuse. That stuff needs to be axed as well. No question about it. But we need if we're serious about it, and I am. But if we're serious about the issue of spending, then we need to talk about completely changing the way in which the federal government operates. Because it's the only way that you can start beginning to chip away at the almost $37 trillion worth of debt that we have right now. Back to MTG.
2025, interest payments are projected to be $952 billion. Which is more than our entire military budget. In 2026, it will be $1 trillion. And by 2035, $1.8 trillion. Over the next decade, total interest payments are projected to be $13.8 trillion. These interest payments don't serve a single American. They don't build a bridge, a road, provide disaster relief, or fund a single part of the behemoth that is the federal government. These interest payments pay our masters who own our debt, and the American people are in debt slavery to everyone who owns our debt. Our crippling national debt and massively growing interest on our debt will destroy us. Not destroy one political party or the other, it will destroy all of us together. It drives inflation, making life unaffordable for Americans struggling to financially survive. It is crippling small businesses struggling to be successful. Our massively growing debt and interest are the chains and shackles harnessed to every American and their children and every generation to come. But first, let us be brutally honest about how this massive debt came to be in the first place. It came from Congress.
Amen.
And from elected presidential administrations.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe enslaving our nation in debt is one of the biggest betrayals against the American people by its own elected government. The American people's anger over this betrayal is what gave birth to the concept of DOGE, the Department of Government Efficiency.
I'm going to pause MTG right there again, and we'll play just a few more minutes of her comments. I'm a huge Dave Ramsey fan. I was fortunate enough to find Dave Ramsey at a young enough age and start living by a lot of the principles and the things that he speaks to. And it's, again, when you look at government finances and personal finances, while the numbers are so much larger in regards to the government, of course, there are a lot of similarities. Spend less than you make, right? That's how I choose to live my life. I'm sure that's how many of you choose to live your life. Live within your means. If you make $50,000 a year, that's what you make. Then you can't spend more than $50,000 a year. And again, that is what is the issue with the federal government. They make, in quotes, through taxes, which is their largest source of income, if you'll call it that. They make a certain amount of money with essentially income tax, and they spend way more. that formula has to shift and has to shift dramatically. If you made $50,000 a year and you were $50,000 in debt, you had $50,000 in a personal loan or on a credit card, the only way to chip away at the debt that you have is to spend significantly less than you make. You can't say, well, I make 50, I'm in debt 50, I'm going to spend 50 a year, right? Because then you're never touching that debt. You need to spend 40 a year or 35 and begin chipping away at that larger number, right? That's the issue that the government has. And as you just heard from her, the servicing on this debt is absurd. $13 trillion in debt service payments? It's just interest. And she said it so well. The American people don't get a damn thing from that. No roads, no bridges, no schools, nothing. It is simply interest on debt. It's got to change. It is not sustainable in any way, shape, or form.
In fact, DOGE became a major part of President Trump's campaign and led to his overwhelming victory in November. Every day, Americans go to work. They run businesses. They have to earn their paycheck. No one guarantees it. And if they don't do a good job, they get fired. They also have to pay their bills, credit card debts, balance their checkbooks, and scrap and save every penny they can in order to plan for that rainy day and hopefully retirement one day. Private businesses only survive on hard-earned income by serving their customers so well that their customers pay them for the services and products they consume. If that business fails, its employees lose their jobs and paychecks, and the owners lose their business and everything they risked along with it. Many go bankrupt in this process and lose everything. No one bails them out. They only survive by excellent customer service and smart financial management. This is the real world that most Americans live, work, and survive in every day. This is the pursuit of happiness, and this is how you pursue the American dream. However, the federal government, government employees, and unelected bureaucrats do not live by the same rules as the great American people and private businesses.
Exactly.
The federal government's income is the American people's hard-earned tax dollars, their literal blood, sweat, and tears. And taxes are collected by law at gunpoint. Don't pay your taxes and you go to jail. The federal government does not have to provide excellent customer service to earn its income. It takes your money whether you like it or not. And federal employees receive their paycheck no matter what. Whether veterans receive their benefits or not, whether your mail shows up or not, and whether your tax dollars are used to help Americans in need or sent to foreign countries, for foreign people, for foreign causes. No matter how bad the federal government fails the American people, it still takes your money. It still pays its own federal employees, and it never, ever goes out of business.
I mean, what do you say? What a phenomenal opening for the House Subcommittee on Delivering on Government Efficiency. It doesn't get more succinct than that. There's not even really much to add to it. Marjorie Taylor Greene, who I'm not the biggest fan in the world of, she nailed this opening statement yesterday. I wish this 6 or 7 minute clip was broadcast all over the news everywhere last night. Because this is really what people need to hear. I'm sure there was probably a clip or two that made it out there that, you know, so the media can demagogue Republicans or something like that. But this is the kind of logical thinking that needs to be adopted by the government. And it's not going to happen quickly. It's not going to happen overnight. Folks, whether we like it or not, it's not going to happen within the Trump administration. Now, Trump is going to make a lot of headway, absolutely. Is the president going to continue, and has he already made sweeping changes? You bet your ass he has. But this is not something that happens in 4 or 6 or 8 or even 10 years. This is a process that if we're serious about, again, I continue to emphasize, if we're serious about it, because many people are not, but if we are serious about it, it is a process that could probably take decades. It's not going to be, there's no simple Band-Aid to put on the solution. There's no magic pill to take or shot to take that absolves us of almost $37 trillion in debt. You've heard the analogy of turning a very large ship, big old container ship, maybe sitting here off the port of Wilmington. Doesn't happen quickly. Can take hours. In the case of what we're dealing with in the federal government, it's going to take years, if not decades, to get there. The one, if nothing else comes of the Trump administration, and I know it will, it already has in the last 3 weeks, but if nothing else comes of the Trump administration, I hope the groundwork and the bedrock is laid for the federal government to clean up their act and get back to serving the American people and doing it in a fiscally responsible manner. I know that is a very high bill. I know that is a massive undertaking and a huge wish list item. I get it. But if those various pieces can be put in play for the next guy or gal to carry on, that to me is a huge, huge win. I'll have the link to this MTG's full comments over in the show notes. You can find those over at patreon.com/ Nick Craig, where you can get access to the daily show notes. You can also get access to bonus content, including our monthly hangout, where we chat politics for a couple of hours. So that'll be coming up here in just a few weeks. Subscribe over at patreon.com/ Nick Craig if you believe you're getting some value out of the show. $5-$10 a month is what we have over there. And you can also set a custom amount as well. It's patreon.com/ Nick Craig. Appreciate all those folks that have come on board and supported the show as we approach almost a month of the Nick Craig Show. As I look at my calendar, Sunday or next Monday will be a full month of doing the show. So it is greatly appreciated and greatly supported. One more clip, kind of keeping on this thread. There was a very interesting post, and I seem to have lost it now, but it was a post that was made by Lee Zeldin, and he, of course, is leading EPA. If you're not familiar with Lee Zeldin, Republican out of the great state of New York, and he ran for governor, almost beat Kathy Hochul in, New York, a very deep blue state. He was now tapped to lead EPA, and he published this video on his X account yesterday claiming that the Biden administration tossed away nearly $20 billion worth of your and my monies on the way out the door. Here's the video from Lee Zeldin. Take a listen.
Hi, this is EPA Administrator Lee Zeldin. One of my very top priorities at EPA is to be an excellent steward of your hard-earned tax dollars. There will be zero tolerance of any waste and abuse. An extremely disturbing video circulated 2 months ago featuring a Biden EPA political appointee talking about how they were tossing gold bars off the Titanic, rushing to get billions of your tax dollars out the door before Inauguration Day. The gold bars were tax dollars, and tossing them off the Titanic meant the Biden administration knew they were wasting it. Following this revelation, during my meetings with members of Congress, I made a very important commitment to them and to the American people, which I reiterated at my confirmation hearing, that if confirmed, I would immediately get a full accounting. Fortunately, my awesome team at EPA has found the gold bars. Shockingly, roughly $20 billion of your tax dollars were parked at an outside financial institution by the Biden EPA. This scheme was the first of its kind in EPA history, and it was purposefully designed to obligate all of the money in a rush job with reduced oversight. Even further, this pot of $20 billion was awarded to just 8 entities that were then responsible for doling out your money to NGOs and others at their discretion with far less transparency. Just under $7 billion was sent to one entity called the Climate United Fund. I'm sure you and I now have some of the same questions. How do these organizations decide how to allocate funding?
I can only imagine.
How much money have they given out so far and to whom? Are there any former Biden EPA staffers who are now working at these entities? Let me make one thing abundantly clear. At this point, there is zero reason to suspect any wrongdoing by the bank. Here's my position as EPA administrator. The financial agent agreement with the bank needs to be instantly terminated, and the bank must immediately return all of the gold bars that the Biden administration tossed off the Titanic. EPA needs to reassume responsibility for all of these funds. We will review every penny that has gone out the door. I will be referring this matter to the Inspector General's office and will work with the Justice Department as well. The days of irresponsibly shoveling boatloads of cash to far-left activist groups in the name of environmental justice and climate equity are over. The American public deserves a more transparent and accountable government than what transpired these past 4 years. We take our obligations under the law as seriously as it gets. I've directed my team to find your gold bars, and they found them. Now we will get them back inside of control of government as we pursue next steps. As President Trump has vowed, we are going to usher in a new golden age of American success for the citizens of every race, religion, color, and creed.
I'll tell you what, man. I am thrilled with the people that Trump has surrounded himself with. I mean, that is a phenomenal video from Lee Zeldin. And it shows the whole of government approach that the Trump administration is taking, right? It's easy to, and a lot of the conversation is surrounding Trump and Doge and Elon Musk and the Department of Government Efficiency. But this isn't just something that one small little entity within the federal government is tackling. You've got the EPA administrator in Lee Zeldin, who's a great guy, by the way. Strong conservative, strong patriot. Who's saying, you know what we're going to do? The Biden administration, like rats off of a sinking ship, started shoveling all this money to outside institutions so that we couldn't be accountable for it. We couldn't cut the flow off. We're going to get that money back. We're going to terminate the agreement we had with the bank effective immediately. And we're taking that $20 billion. We're taking the $20 billion back. And I hope he's successful in doing it. You're seeing more and more of these clawbacks from the federal government, which is great, because this money does need to be responsible and accountable to you and I, because it's our money. And it's great to see so many of these different cabinet level officials and departments, whether it's DHS or EPA or whatever, all working together with this same mission and notion of we are going to get government under control. We are going to make government accountable. It is music to my ears. Not just Doge, not just Trump, but these major agencies where a lot of this waste, a lot of this fraud, and a lot of this frivolous spending takes place. Right? Congress isn't just writing checks and buying nonsense and funding this, that, or the other. It's all through these agencies. $20 billion to a bunch of left-wing NGOs to study some stupid snail somewhere in the middle of nowhere. Oh, yeah, look at this. We spent $2.5 billion on research on a snail. And because this snail is pretty unique, now you're not allowed to build within 500 miles of where the snail might possibly move. Thanks, taxpayer, for your dollars. We put it to good use. Oh, you want to build on your property? Nope, sorry. There's some unique snail that lives there, or could have potentially lived there at some point, so now we're going to put some sort of federal regulation on this land, so yeah, don't worry about it, you can't build there either. That's the kind of work that comes out of these NGOs in association with the EPA. How that's helping you at all, I will never know because I can't explain it because it doesn't exist. Not too dissimilar from DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion. The only way that these groups, these NGOs, especially in the climate realm, which is a complete and total sham, the whole industry, the only way they can justify their existence is by studying snails and plants and some weird fish or some snake or whatever and recommending that we legislate around it or recommend that EPA put some sort of restriction around it. It's the only way that they can constantly go back to these agencies with their hands open and say, more money, please. It's exactly the same as DEI. Make the issue so that you can be the savior of it and continue to rake the taxpayers over the coal to fund your progressive liberal nonsense, which you and I see zero ROI on. Literally none. Whatsoever. EPA is not the only entity, the only agency that is clawing back some cash. We've got an update on a story about that $59 million from FEMA that we talked about earlier this week. We'll have those details coming up in just a few minutes. You're listening to The Nick Craig Show, streaming live this morning on YouTube, Rumble, and X. And welcome back to The Nick Craig Show, streaming live this Thursday morning on YouTube, Rumble, and X. Folks, I want to tell you about Ground News. Staying up to date with events and news throughout the day can be incredibly difficult. It's hard to go to just one single website and get the full story. That's why I have been using Ground News. Ground News is an app and website that combines news from around the world in one place so that you can compare coverage. For every news source, you can see if they have a political bias, how reliable their reporting is, and who owns them. They have a really cool feature called Blind Spot that highlights news that disproportionately is covered by one side of the political spectrum. Get your news from thousands of sources worldwide in one place and verify your information to know where your news is coming from. I use Ground News every day to prep for the show. Subscribe through my link to get 40% off your Vantage subscription. That's the one that I use to get unlimited access to every feature. Visit nickcraig.com/ground, G-R-O-U-N-D, to learn more and save 40%. Your subscription not only helps the show, but it supports Ground News as they make the media landscape more transparent. Visit nickcraig.com/ground to learn more. That's nickcraig.com/ground. So we earlier were talking about government spending, government accountability, and this video from Lee Zeldin, $20 billion that he's going to try and claw back that the Biden administration essentially laundered to a bank as they were losing and out of power. We heard from Marjorie Taylor Greene about DOGE and their first subcommittee. And we've got an update this morning on the money that FEMA allocated in regards to the $60 million that the Biden administration or that the FEMA spent on luxury hotels in New York City last week. So here's the update as we're tracking it this morning. The Trump administration has officially retrieved the $59 million that the Federal Emergency Management Agency allocated last week to house illegals in hotels in New York City. There was a post from Christy Noem that reads as follows. I have clawed back the full payment that FEMA deep state activists unilaterally gave to New York City migrant hotels. FEMA was funding the Roosevelt Hotel that serves as a Tren de Agra base of operation and was used to house Lake and Riley's killer. That Tren de Agra is a South American drug gang. Christy Noem goes on to say, mark my words, there will not be a single penny spent that goes against the interests and the safety of the American people. So a major, major win there. Going forward, on Monday morning, Elon Musk shared on X that Doge and the agency established to root out government waste discovered that FEMA spent that almost $60 million last week, and we're learning they were staying at the Roosevelt Hotel, a very swanky luxury hotel in New York City. That was, of course, confirmed by the Department of Homeland Security. And as we brought you the news, I believe it was yesterday, it may have been Tuesday, four FEMA employees have been fired in regards to this. And we are learning this morning, or learned yesterday afternoon, according to Secretary Kristi Noem, that that money has officially been clawed back, which is absolutely phenomenal news. So, you know, these deep state individuals that, as I mentioned yesterday, you don't have to like the Trump administration if you're a federal employee. You don't have to like Trump. You don't even have to like Republicans. But we're in charge now. You're going to hear this a lot from me over the next couple of months. We won. We're in charge. We set the agenda. You have two options. You either play ball or you get out. Those are the only two options. There's no third option. There's no mixing of both. You either go along with the agenda or you find something else to do with your life. Go work in private business. Move out of country and go work for some left-wing government somewhere else. We're in charge now. We set the agenda. You either get on board or you get the hell out. It's as simple as that. There's no other explanation or description that's needed. It's very, very simple. And I wanted to follow up on a couple of things that we have been tracking over the last few weeks in regards to the Trump executive orders and what we've seen with Democrats suing him consistently, court and judge shopping to get in front of individuals that they believe will give them a favorable opinion. And to the success of the left, I have to give the devil credit where it's due. They have been very successful in the first couple of weeks of gumming up the Trump administration, gumming up the executive branch, and gumming up these executive orders. As soon as they're filed, they've got lawsuits ready. It's multiple Democrat attorney generals, including here Jeff Jackson, who's our new Democrat AG in North Carolina. They are immediately taking these things to court. So I've got two different posts for you this morning. One is from the El Salvador president in his reaction to activist judges overstepping their authority and essentially, the tweet says, hamstringing Trump and Doge. And he says this, this is the new El Salvadorian president. That's exactly what judges were doing in El Salvador in 2021 when he rose to power. So we impeached them all and then proceeded to fix the country. I think we are circling dangerously close to the Democrats' worst nightmare. They are overextending themselves on this judicial stuff. They are going way too hard in regards to politics with these executive orders, absolutely overstepping their authority, absolutely inserting themselves into the executive branch where they have no place to be whatsoever. As I mentioned yesterday, we are coming dangerously close to the Democrats having to bite their tongue with this. Because it seems to me that if this continues to happen, the Trump administration just goes, to hell with these federal district court judges. We'll wait till we get a ruling from the Supreme Court. And speaking of the Supreme Court, a very interesting post from Benjamin Weingartner over at The Federalist. We talked about Sean Davis's tweet over the last couple of mornings. This is an opinion from 2018 from Justice Clarence Thomas. The case was Trump v. Hawaii. And this is what Clarence Thomas had to say at the time. Quote, these injunctions, this is during the first Trump administration, 2018, these injunctions are beginning to take a toll on the federal court system, preventing legal questions from percolating through the federal courts, encouraging form shopping, and making every case a national emergency for the courts and for the executive branch. He says form shopping, that's judge or court shopping. I am skeptical that district courts have the authority to enter universal injunctions. These injunctions did not emerge until a century and a half after the founding. and they appear to be inconsistent with long-standing limits on the equitable relief and power of Article 3 of the courts. Universal injunctions, at best, boil down to a policy judgment about how powers ought to be allocated among our three branches of government. But people already made their choice when they ratified the Constitution. Universal injunctions are legally and historically dubious. If federal courts continue to issue them, this court is duty-bound to adjudicate their authority to do so. Whew! Some real spicy words coming in from Clarence Thomas. Again, all the way back in 2018. And it links to an article over at The Federalist from 2019. This was published almost 6 years ago at this point by this same individual, Ben Weingartner. And the headline is this: February 15th, 2019. President Trump needs to stop activists from controlling the country with universal injunctions. And it's a pretty interesting article. I will throw it in the show notes. I'm not going to go through it. It's obviously a little bit dated, 2019. That was just a couple of years ago, right? I mean, can't believe 2019 was 6 years ago at this point. But it goes through the issues that the Trump administration was facing in the first term and now is facing now, where you've got these activist judges, of course, appointed by Democrats, but you've got these activist judges that are taking it upon themselves to essentially become the executive of the United States, become the president with these injunctions. They are not authorized to do that. But again, to the Democrats' credit, they know what they're doing. They know how to shop these issues. They know how to deal with these issues. And they're doing a very good job at it. Jay Hills sent in a dollar over on Rumble and says, these judges are not president. They cannot usurp power from the executive branch. Jay Hill, absolutely. And that's why the point I'm making is I think if Democrats continue down this path, they are going to be very dissatisfied with the result. They are going to be very, very unhappy with what the outcome ends up being. And the outcome is, to me, is pretty clear. The Trump administration says to these courts, you don't have the power to do this. To hell with you. We're not following your orders. Now, that's not my first preference. I think that sets a very dangerous precedent, and I'm not a fan of ignoring the courts. So back to Clarence Thomas's thoughts on this from 2018. He says it here at the end. If federal courts continue to issue them, talking about these ridiculous injunctions, if federal courts continue to issue them, this court, meaning the Supreme Court of the United States, SCOTUS, is duty bound to adjudicate their authority to do so. And this goes all the way back to the Sean Davis tweet from earlier this week, which read that John Roberts, who's the Chief Justice, and the Supreme Court have an authority to take this on. They have got to put these courts in their place. They do not have the authority to operate in the manner in which they are. It is 100% partisan. It is 100% disagreement on policy, which, here's the thing, disagreement on policy is fine. I don't agree with everything Trump does. You don't agree with probably everything I say. You shouldn't, at least. That would be really weird. You're allowed to have policy disagreements. You're allowed to say, I don't agree with this person. I don't agree with this stance. I don't agree with this issue. You're allowed to do that. However, what these judges are doing is they are usurping themselves into the executive branch and saying, because we disagree with you from a policy perspective, because we disagree with you from a policy perspective, we are going to block whatever you're doing. That is not the role of these federal district courts. This is not the way in which they should be operating. They're not tackling legal issues. They're dealing with policy matters in court. Policy and law and government, that is done at the congressional level. That is done through passing legislation. That is done from signing bills into law or the president enacting executive orders or executive is using some sort of executive privilege to do something. The courts do not have that power. But because they adamantly disagree with Trump from a policy standpoint, they put forward these sweeping preliminary injunctions, these temporary stays, these temporary blocks that you've heard all about over the last 3 weeks. And according to Clarence Thomas, they don't have a choice to do that. They don't have the ability or the legal authority to do that in any way, shape, or form. And he says, these injunctions are beginning to take a toll on the federal court system. I agree. It is a huge issue with when you disagree with somebody politically. Again, not legally, but politically. The solution is, I'm going to judge shop this issue. I'm going to get in front of a friendly court somewhere in the Northeast or somewhere out in California, and I'm going to sue you to stop what you're trying to do. Not over a legal issue, but over essentially a political issue. Very damaging precedent. Now, there is some good news on this, however. Being reported late last night, this came in around 8 o'clock or so. This is over at the New York Post this morning. Federal judge allows Trump to push forward with a buyout for government workers after 75,000 accept the offers. A federal judge on Wednesday night declined to pause the Trump administration's buyout program for government workers, giving President Trump a key win in his push to shrink the size of the federal government. U.S. District Judge George A. O'Toole ruled that the union groups, aka Democrats, suing to block the so-called deferred resignation program lacked standing. And listen to this. And that his Massachusetts-based court, because they shopped it to a judge in Massachusetts, that his Massachusetts-based court lacked the jurisdiction to proceed with the lawsuit. And just think about it. Why would a U.S. district judge in Massachusetts have the legal standing, the legal authority to block a federal buyout program? Just looking at it, knowing nothing about the law, of which I don't know much, even knowing nothing about the law, you look at that and go, why would a Massachusetts district court judge be dealing with this? Doesn't make any sense at all. This is even more interesting. O'Toole is an appointee of former President Bill Clinton. Now, he did temporarily block the Office of Personnel Management, OPM, from moving ahead with the program earlier this week. This was after unions representing more than 800,000 federal workers charged that the buyouts offered were unlawful. Why? Who the hell knows? Because Trump did it, so it's got to be illegal. The judge ruled the plaintiffs here are not directly impacted by the directive. Instead, they allege that the directive subjects them to upstream effects, including a diversion of resources to answer member questions about the directive, a potential loss of membership, wink, wink, nod, nod, and possible reputational harm. Why are these unions against this? Because they lose members. What happens when they lose members? Well, they stop taking money out of people's paychecks every week. And it's the only way that these unions and the presidents and the heads of these unions can afford their swanky houses and their nice cars and their 3-martini lunches that they go on 7 days a week. They start losing membership. Oh boy, that's a problem. It's not because they actually care about the workers they represent. In modern day, unions could care less. But it's the revenue stream. The cash stream stops coming in. Oh, and it also just happens to be that these labor unions happen to be some of the biggest donors to Democrats. So, color me shocked. I can't imagine that that is the case. They're the largest donors and have an incredible amount of influence over elections and, of course, almost always falling on the side of Democrats. O'Toole continued by saying the unions do not have the required direct stake in the Fork Directive, but are challenging a policy affecting others, specifically executive branch employees. This is not sufficient. Going to Justice Clarence Thomas's point. They're not challenging something legally. They're challenging a policy that doesn't even affect them because they disagree with it. Because they disagree with it. And it's, again, fine to disagree with it. Doesn't give you standing in court, however. The Office of Personnel Management had given some 2 million federal workers unwilling to comply with return to office mandates a February 6th deadline to accept about 8 months of pay and benefits in exchange for the resignation. The agency further warned that the buyout offer would not be extended past the deadline and that workers choosing to stay should expect downsizing, restructuring, reassignments, and workforce reductions under Trump. I'll tell you what, man. It's a hell of a buyout deal. 8 months of pay and benefits, federal pay and federal benefits. No non-compete. You can go and work another job. You have 8 months to figure out what you want to do. The whole time you're getting your full salary. It's a hell of a deal. As somebody that dealt with losing employment earlier this year, it would have been real nice to have any sort of payout. Nevertheless, 8 months of pay and benefits. Wow. About 75,000 federal workers have accepted the deal, according to OMP, as of right now. A spokesperson for them said, quote, OMP is pleased that the court has rejected a desperate effort to strike down the deferred resignation program. As of 7 p.m. tonight, that was last night, as of 7 p.m. tonight, the program is now closed. There is no longer any doubt the deferred resignation program was both legal and a valuable option for federal employees. This program was carefully designed, thoroughly vetted, and provides generous benefits so federal workers can plan for their futures. OPM had left the program open to resignations after the judge's initial stay of the deadline. The American Federation of Government Employees, AFGE, who was one of the groups attempting to block the program, maintains that the program is illegal despite its lack of standing to sue. AFGE President Everand Kelly said in a statement, "Today's ruling is a setback in the fight for dignity and fairness for public servants, but it's not the end of the fight. AFGE's lawyers are evaluating the decision and assessing next steps." Let's take a look at Everand Kelly. Let's see what's going on with him. So he is a unionist. Is this all we've got on him? He's got a relatively small Wikipedia page. Trying to see if there's any information about, you know, where he lives, how big his house is, things like that, right? That is always coming from these union individuals. And unfortunately, it doesn't look like a whole lot. Doesn't seem... Let's see. It looks like he was on CNBC a couple of days ago. Let's see what's going on here. Let's see if he had anything to say in regards to this.
I think it's a pretty good deal. I guess 50,000 have accepted it, Everett. Are they being hoodwinked or fooled?
I truly believe that myself. I've spoken to several of those individuals that have taken this option. And what they're saying is, you know, we're just tired of the rat race. You know, I was going to be retiring anyway in the next few months, so I'm going to go ahead and take this offer here. Now, I certainly believe that they're being hoodwinked. I think they're being fooled, you know, because just like you said, there is no guarantee that they'll ever receive any pay for this offer. You know, they say it's a fork in the road. I say it's a knife in their back because, you know, there's just no continuity to what's going on. Okay.
Yeah, great. So the individual, and this is, of course, the narrative from the left, Trump offers this buyout. And then Democrats claim, well, what if he doesn't pay? What if he doesn't follow through on his end of the deal? Why do you believe that that's going? Why would he offer individuals 8-month buyouts and then not pay them? He could just simply fire them. He's offering these individuals a buyout in good faith to give them an off-ramp, to give them some runway, some lead time to find other employment if they so want to. If they're at retirement age, then to hell with it. You get to 3 months of 8 months of not having to work and getting a full-time paycheck and benefits. I don't even understand the notion there. It's just fear-mongering. It doesn't make any sense. So this federal judge is allowing this to go forward. AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees, says that they're evaluating the decision and assessing their next steps, indicating that the legal fight continues. Sue till blue. You don't like something that's being done politically? What is the solution? Not win at the ballot box. Not try and convince the American people that your ideas are better. But go and get in front of liberal judges that will rule in your favor to gum up the administration. It is a very stupid plan for the Democrats. It is very short-sighted from the left. However, to me, there's seemingly no indication that that's going to change anytime soon. They seem hell-bent on going forward with this stuff. They seem hell-bent on thinking this is their solution going forward. And I think it's going to, long-term, it's going to end up being incredibly damaging to them. Incredibly damaging. That's going to do it for a Thursday edition of the Nick Craig Show. Thanks for joining us live this morning on YouTube, Rumble, and X. Don't forget to check out the podcast 24/7 and tell your friends about it. It's the Nick Craig Show, available wherever you get your podcasts. You can also listen online at nickcraig.com. We're back tomorrow morning live and via podcast. Have a great Thursday.